Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to ANCAST. Welcome back after a kind of a long hiatus there. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
Yo, we're happy to be back.
Welcome to my messy hair.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry for the state of our whole shit here.
Our whole entire shit.
Yeah, our whole shit. We just moved and into a new office space here, and we haven't really had time to set it up because we had to do that, and then we had the manga guide and like a million other things to take care of. Uh-huh. So we haven't had a whole lot of time for the podcast lately, but we're back now. We will be broadcasting from here. We'll do something with the background. At some point, we'll do something with it.
We may rearrange the cameras. We'll just figure something out.
Yeah, we'll probably rearrange the cameras. This is a very temporary situation. But we had, like, some fucking stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
We got that good content for you.
Yeah, totally. The last time we were going to have a show, we couldn't because you fell sick. Mm-hmm. And I had intended on talking about this movie I saw called Mary and the Witch's Flower. And I did want to talk about it very briefly. It doesn't come out until January. So I feel like maybe it would be a better idea to like talk about it a little bit like closer to when it comes out. But so if people don't know what I'm talking about, Mary and the Witch's Flower is this movie that was made by basically Studio Ghibli. So like, do you know like the guy who directed like Arrietty and the guy who produced When Marnie Was There and Princess Kaguya, they got together and made a studio called Studio Ponoc that has like a lot of ex-Ghibli talent working at it. They made this movie called Mary and the Witch's Flower, which is based on an old novel from the 70s called The Little Broomstick, which is about a plucky young girl going on a magical adventure in
Sounds
another
pretty
world.
Sounds pretty out of left field for Ghibli.
In which she is separated from her parents. And has to learn to fend for herself and rely on her inner strength in order to overcome the odds, as it were.
That's a daunting new challenge for Ghibli personnel.
Well, it's not Ghibli. It's Studio Ponoc.
Right. I said personnel, so Ghibli personnel.
They made a Studio Ghibli film. That's what they made. Now, I don't know. How did you feel about The Secret World of Arrietty? Did you see that movie?
Yeah, I saw it once. It was incredibly boring.
I feel like that's harsh.
I never have had
harsh,
a desire
you know?
To... I've never had a desire to go back and be like, oh,
me neither.
Well...
Like, I didn't buy the Blu-ray.
I felt nothing.
I didn't really want to go back to it. Like, I wasn't, like, itching to revisit Arrietty, but it's not like a bad movie, and like the guy's he's not a terrible director, but like
he's not
a bad director at all. Like, he's talented and everything. It's just like this kind of had a lot of the same problems that I thought Arrietty had. Like, the story's flat a little bit, and like
it's not bad, it's just like it's just so dull and so unmemorable. Like, that was the issue that I had with it.
Unmemorable. Yeah, I mean, like, Mary and the Witch's Flower is spectacular visually, but it doesn't do anything you haven't seen before. Like, there's one effect where, like, so the story is about this bored little girl who finds herself in the world of magic, and she goes to a Hogwarts style magic academy, but that's not really what the movie's about. The movie's about her. There's really only like four or five characters in the movie. It's sort of her versus the headmistress of the school. And there's a scene where they render the headmistress as this big water thing. You've probably seen it in the trailers. If you've seen anything for this movie, you've probably seen the image
just
of
like,
this
just
lady.
From the end of Tales of Earthsea.
Kind of, yeah. So, like, the movie's, like, full of that
Another
stuff. Like
classic.
Like, Ghibli mainstay. So, like, you know the way when Kiki gets kicked off of a broom, the way the broom flips out and flies away? They do that exact shot. So, like, there's a bunch of stuff like exactly that from, like, Totoro up to Howl's Moving Castle. Like,
I've seen the automatons.
A lot of that stuff. Yeah, the automatons are very, like, Howl's Moving Castle blob creatures. Like, it combines kind of the Lapta with the Howl blob creatures, like, late Miyazaki blob creatures with early Miyazaki blob robots, right?
Yes.
Like, it does that a lot. I think, like, if you're a Ghibli person, or really just an anime fan, like, you should see it. You should take it in, see how you feel about it, because that's going to happen. They're going to make more of those. I think the idea is basically like Studio Ghibli's style doesn't belong to them, and anyone can just make a movie that looks like that. And now you have a bunch of ex-Ghibli people who came in, and like they got all the Ghibli background artists. Once Ghibli shut down their production, they got like most of the background artists. So the backgrounds are amazing, but they all kind of look like stuff out of Totoro and like, you know, the Enrietti and stuff like that. It's that same old world European aesthetic that Ghibli's really obsessed with and has been obsessed with for 30 years or whatever. So I hope that their next movie is like I interviewed these guys, and that interview, you'll see it on the 15th. And I thought it would be rude to ask them like, so any interest in like carving out your own style? I feel like that's rude, but they're very upfront about the fact that they're biting Ghibli. I don't know. What do you think? Is that rude? Would that have been rude?
There's, in my experience, there's always a way to phrase an ostensibly rude question into a different question to get the answer you wanted to the rude question. So that's usually what I do. But you have to think about it for a while ahead of time. You know, I did that actually with an interview we have on Heaven's Feel coming up. So that's I asked about the porn.
Heaven's Feel interviews come in with the director and the voice actress.
Your teaser is I asked about the porn and I got an interesting answer.
Yeah, that was an interesting answer about the porn. About the porn.
About the porn, anyway.
So, Mary and the Witch of Fire, like I said, it's going to be in theaters in January. I really, like, I always say this. I feel like if you're a big anime person and you like, you know, you should keep up with the movies. Like, watch the movies that come out. There's not that many of them. Usually it's intended to be, like, a showcase of, like, you know, what the what this group of animators can do. Like, they're worth seeing, and they're only about 2 hours long. So I think it's worth seeing. Also, just to see maybe what the future of Ghibli-esque stuff is going to be like, which is, like, made by studios other than Ghibli, but, like, a bunch of Ghibli talent got poached to make it. It's interesting. Yeah. Anyway, so I saw that. Okay, so you answer the question. Do we go into Fate first, or do we talk about Ancient Magus Bride first?
I mean, there's a lot of Fate to talk about, so let's cover Ancient Magus Bride first, because... Okay. Yeah.
So, that's we're the one on thing episode 5 now.
Yes.
I had only seen the first episode, and I'll be honest, I was a little lukewarm on it. I didn't flip over head over heels for it, like, seemingly...
I did.
Everywhere. Yeah, you totally did.
And I was like, yep, this is real good.
The forums did, anime fans at large did, and they were right, too. It didn't really, like, it's too many characters all at once, and, like...
A lot of people had seen the OVAs first. You had not. You started with
I had not.
First
I did go back and watch which those, is a little bit really cold. Cool. They're really good. They look more like kind of what I was expecting, but the TV show eventually got there. So I caught up with it the next four episodes after that, and each one was better than the last. Did you feel that way?
Maybe not
the cats one, maybe not the fifth one, but...
The cats one was the peak of the whole show.
Two, three, and four I thought were really good. Five laid it on a little thick for me. It was like almost Full Metal Alchemist style. You're laughing because it's so over-the-top tragic. Like,
I actually was not expecting the lady to explode.
The over-the-top tragedy. I made a gif of that and reversed it and like, yeah.
Oh, ew.
I was playing it back and forth.
Ew, what's wrong with you?
It was so funny. I kept thinking oh man, a lot of my relationships have ended that way.
It is over the top tragic, Jesus. It is over the top tragic, but I wasn't expecting it. For some reason, I didn't think she was. I thought she was gonna have like eternal life, or it was gonna fuck up in some way. I didn't expect it to just fail, and for the wizard to go like, oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, you know, it was real good, and I think it was the way it was executed was real good. But no, I didn't have a problem with the over top tragedy because it's a very high concept show, and I don't think anything short of like, I don't know, looking... The main character looking into the abyss of death and having to slowly tell herself, I don't want this after all, is what the show calls for. Because that's what she wants. She wants to die. And the whole show is like, okay, we're going to have you confront death through all these other characters, and you're going to go, you know what? You know, maybe I should appreciate, you know, what I have. So I think without being... It's not proselytizing. It's very gentle and empathetic, and it's a good show. But yeah, like, I think it needs to get about that dark.
And I like the fact that they raised the stakes, and here was another thing that I had, and about, I think it was like episode 3, I started being like, wait just a second, what it reminded me of for a little bit was this style of story that is like Mary Sue.
A lot of shoujo manga is like this.
Right, so boring, Twilight, boring, unremarkable, frankly uninteresting girl is swooned over and treated as though she's the most important and secretly the most powerful thing ever.
Because she can use magic real good.
By a bunch of very handsome, extremely powerful, supernatural men whose lives all revolve around her in some way. And everything is actually about how powerful and special she is, even though she looks so fragile.
A lot of shoujo and otome games.
Well, and a lot of Western fan fiction. Twilight, that is Twilight, like, down to the nub, that is Twilight. I don't like that kind of story because it sucks to me.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not. I don't like that kind of story when it's written for dudes either. When it's milquetoast garbage boy is center of attention
isekai.
For some reason. Yeah, you know, I'm not a huge fan of badly written isekai either. So like, I started getting whiffs of that where it got a little clumsy in some of the at some points it got a little clumsy for me. But like, that's kind of what it reminded me of for a minute. But it moved past it very swiftly and sort of resolved those thematic loose ends that I was kind of pointing out. But like, it wound up not going there. But I feel like there's a lot of shows like that.
Well, we have one in this season. Code Realize is an adaptation.
Is that like that? Game.
Yeah.
Is
well,
that...
a lot of people are giving it more, and I agree. They're giving it more carte blanche than a lot of Otome game adaptations for two reasons. One, the girl shows some agency, like she actually does things. And two, it's more story driven. It's not just like, let's fart around with these hot boys. It's based on this very direct story. This sort of Black Butler-esque, you know, faux Victorian conspiracies in England story. But like, that just means it's better than other Otome game adaptations of its stripe, which are terrible. So it's not like a good show. It's just like, oh, I would play this game because it seems like it would be more entertaining as a game. But like, what's that noise?
I don't know. Something happening outside.
Okay. I thought it was your computer going to explode.
Nope.
Ends like all your other relationships, apparently. Explodes into goo. And let's move on to that topic. What was... right. So I think that Ancient Magus Bride avoids this because Chisei is not... I don't know. She's not like... how do I put this? She's not like a desirable nobody. She's like a... She's like a person just not living at all, and she has to sort of be rehabilitated because she lived such a horrible childhood, and she's been, she's closed herself off from living. And the guy rehabilitating her is not like this magic prince who's come to save her. He's just a weirdo who's just really interested in investigating humans, and so in order to like sort of show him how humans are supposed to live, Chisei kind of has to figure that out for herself too. She's like, no, people aren't like this. People are like, well, I have a lot of bad examples, but let me give you some good examples, you know. So it's a really good dynamic, and they're really charming, and you know, it doesn't feel like a weird. It's definitely a romance of a sort. It's definitely a fetish of a sort, but it doesn't feel like a lazy Twilight-esque thing. It feels very thoughtful, and it's just about her working through this depression. You
know? Yeah. No, it is carefully written. I would say well written. I've come around to the characters. I think Elias is interesting now. I didn't think he was interesting at first. Mm-hmm. Same with Chisei, really. Like, came around on most of the characters. Yeah. This show is solid. I like it a lot. I didn't give it enough credit to begin with. I'm glad I stuck with it.
I do appreciate the kitty story, just being about how you shouldn't fuck with cats and they're great. And
yeah, it was pretty good.
I wish
the cats had been cuter, but they were going for sort of a darker story. So anime, like when they draw real cats in anime, they're never cute to me. They're always really.
I find them more cute because they're more photoreal. I like that.
Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because I
prefer like a stylized cute cat.
Well, I might. It depends on the context, but because this is supposed to be more photo, I liked that they were drawing them like how real cats look, how they yawn and their weird teeth poke out funny. Like, I like that. I think that's cute. But
what
it is
the chat? I am curious what the chat thinks. Like, photoreal cats or like stylized cats?
It depends.
Like,
on the context.
Which do you prefer in anime? Mm-hmm. And you know, if you like dogs, whatever.
And the thing that I really liked about it was that like all the cats were their personalities fit their breed. So you had like a Russian blue who was just like sort of cuddly and quiet and like just genial. And then you had a Siamese who like thinks he's the boss of everybody and is like shares too much information all the time and is very like gregarious. And I love that. It was like, oh, okay. She like, you know, she looked up how each kitty is.
She looked up how each kitty is.
How each kitty is, yes.
That's funny. Uh-huh. All right. Well, anyway, so that show is really good. And if anyone cares enough about my opinion to have said, well, maybe I'll put it off because Zach doesn't seem too big on it. I changed that now. You should totally watch it. I don't think anyone thinks that, though. Yeah.
So this Rachel McCarthy in the chat has the best take, which is no cat is a bad cat.
That's a good point.
Except the Luna from Sailor Moon Crystal. That's a bad cat.
Is that a bad cat?
Yeah, she was like 20% butt, and her face was off model, and it was bad.
Oh, Sailor Moon Crystal. Yeah, where she looked, they drew her like a horse.
Yeah, that was really strange.
Yeah, it was a weird looking cat. Yo, let's talk about Fate. Yo. We saw a bunch of Fate.
We saw a lot of Fate.
We went to Aniplex's very nice premiere, their red carpet premiere at the Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles, which is an amazing venue.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it's really pretty in here.
It's restored from like the 20s, and it has like extremely, the walls and the ceilings, like it has cathedral ceilings covered in like crusted in like 1920s era deco. Like it's nuts.
It's really impressive.
It's crazy. And we watched a Fate movie in there. We saw the English subtitle version of Fate's Day Night, Heaven's Feel.
Number one.
Part one.
Presage flower.
Is it pronounced presage? What is a presage flower? What is it?
An unbloomed flower, maybe? I don't know.
Is that what it is?
No, I don't know.
Does anyone in the chat know what a presage flower is? I'm sure they'll tell us at some point. Anyway, so we saw this movie. It got really, it had a sort of an overwhelming reaction in Japan. People really liked it. Got really good reviews. We published a pretty good review of it. Jacob, what did you think? We're going to try and do this as spoiler-free as possible. It's a flower that blooms before sage blooms.
Okay.
I don't think that's right. Like, someone in the chat says presage. I know what that is.
Okay.
Two S's? That's a flower.
Well, it's not spelled that way, though.
Well, isn't that a term for it? Presage flower?
It's spelled P-R-E, sage. It's not spelled with two S's in the movie's title.
Yeah, I know, but they never say that in the movie. There's no titular
line. I don't know, and I don't care,
to be
honest
with you. No one says, like, sure, I'm tired of all this heaven, Fate's Day Night, Heaven's Feel, part one, presage flower.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to try and do this spoiler-free.
We are?
Oh, wait, hang on. Jack 44 says, a sign. It's a presage as a noun, is a sign or warning that something, historically something bad, will happen, an omen or a portent. So that stands to reason.
So the presage
they
flower.
They call the first installment of their dark trilogy.
The presage flower is Sakura, because her name's Sakura, and she's a Sakura.
Oh, her name's Sakura. Yeah, no. What did you think of the film? We're going to try and keep it spoiler-free.
Spoiler-free? I mean, like, I'm trying to really choose my words, right? So you cannot watch this without having not only seen Fate's Day Night and Unlimited Blade Works and or the old Dename or played the visual novel or whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, it's totally inaccessible to
it
newcomers.
It is totally inaccessible to newcomers. So you need to know that right off the bat. However, the second caveat I would add is it is also inaccessible to people who don't already know the story in some form. Like, even if so, I have not played through the whole Fate's Day Night visual novel. I've seen large passages of Sakura's route of Heaven's Feel. I know everything that happens. I didn't, like, play through the entire game because at this point in my life, I'm not ready to do that yet. I've seen a lot of...
You're not ready to cross that bridge yet.
I'm not ready to cross that bridge yet. But, like, I know exactly what happens, and if I didn't, Zach, you didn't know what happens, right? You're not familiar with what happens.
Oh, I've been spoiled on that road.
I know, but you don't know step by step. You had to ask me to explain things.
I didn't commit it to memory, no.
Yeah, but
I understood the film. I knew what was happening in the movie.
Yeah, it's not like incomprehensible, but it is.
I would not have known what was happening in the movie if I had not absorbed by osmosis all of that shit and then read and watched a bunch of it myself. Period.
Right.
Would not have understood a damn thing. The dude next to me was asleep pretty much the whole time.
All right. So this movie is made for people who already know the story, period. Like, that was a long way to say, like, they expect you to kind of already know the story because the way that they focus on things and the way that they pace stuff out and the way that stuff is, they hold for applause during, this is not really a spoiler, there is a infamous Mapo Tofu scene.
Yeah, they hold for applause during
they
the
They hold
scenes.
For applause throughout it.
Through
and
the
it
memes.
Lasts
a couple
10
scenes,
minutes. Yeah. It lasts so long, this Mapo Tofu scene, because it became a meme. Like, that's basically why, because it eventually became a meme. So the whole thing is made, like, is hold for applause the movie. And it is...
It's something to be watching a theater with Fate fans.
Yeah, it's something to watch in a theater with Fate fans. And it is not... I don't know. You can't really evaluate it as traditional cinema or whatever, as something telling a story, because you're watching a story that the way it's told, they already expect you to know it, and it is like it's told like fan service. The way entire scenes exist.
I would say the whole movie is fan service.
Entire scenes exist only to, like, the way that they foreshadow Ilya is not the way that they would foreshadow something if they need, this is important information you need to know later. The way that they foreshadow Ilya is, you know it's coming.
Hey.
Like, hey.
And look
so
who it is.
It is. Yeah.
Actually, that's the whole movie. Look who it is.
Yeah. And, so,
and everyone's like, yeah.
So my evaluation of the movie.
Gilgamesh shows up for no reason.
Mm-hmm. My evaluation of the movie is like, well, I mean, if you already know what it is and you like it, you're going to have a great time. But like, if you don't, if you're not already a fan, like this is the most exclusionary, like just don't even bother. But like the production values on this. So this is hands down the most stunning thing that UFO Table has ever produced. It is every frame of it is immaculate.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like that, like there's some stuff that where UFO Table has maybe gone off the rails and they've just added a lot of digital effects. They've just added a lot. And I don't mean that this is loaded down with CG and like it's high budget, but I mean it's just really thoughtful. The storyboarding of everything, of the comedic scenes is really clever, of the dramatic stuff is really good. The action is mind-blowing. There are shots that's just somebody looping talking, right? And there's like a fire in the background. But the way that they chose to use the rack focus throughout that scene to like there's like 20 layers of fire and wet, and it's raining at the time, and the wetness on the guy's clothes as he's talking, and the way that they shift the focus in the scene is just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's fucking gorgeous.
So this movie is stunningly beautiful, but it is for fans. It is for fans only, and I don't really know
how to characterize it. I was bored for a solid probably hour.
It's pretty boring.
This is the Fate experience. Mm-hmm. I am bored during it. Afterwards, I'm like, let's talk about it.
I don't feel that way about Fate Zero or Fate Apocrypha.
No,
I don't feel that way.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that. I only feel that way about Fate Stay Night. Mm-hmm. I don't think Garden of Sinners is boring either, but Fate Stay Night specifically, mm-hmm. Garden of Sinners is kind of torturous to watch. But once you're through it, it's different though. That's mm-hmm. a different experience. Fate Stay Night is kind of boring to me. But I still enjoy it, and I like the characters. I like knowing the story, and I follow the characters and everything. But I will admit it's boring. And mm-hmm. Heaven's Feel is, I thought it was extra boring mm-hmm. compared to like when you're talking about Fate Stay Night in a world of boring Fate Stay Night. Mm-hmm. This movie I thought was more boring than especially the UFO Table mm-hmm. version of the show.
So people point out the Heaven's Feel route, like Barry's, like okay, all of Fate Stay Night and. My opinion is interminably poorly paced and redundant.
This is poorly paced.
But when they're talking, like when I talk about like the immaculateness of the way that shots are framed, there is it is indulgent. It is masturbatory. There is a scene where Shira is talking to Shinji, and it's basically just foreshadowing about stuff you're going to find out very quickly anyway, and the movie already expects you to know. So what the fuck? But they're walking up a staircase, and the camera, it's just so much attention put into moving this camera up the staircase as they speak, and it's information that could have been communicated in fucking 5 seconds, and they take 2 minutes going up this immaculately animated staircase. It is the closest UFO Table has ever gotten to a Shaft production, is the way that this movie is animated. It's where it's communicating like this basic exposition, like it's the most lofty thing in the world, and it's just God.
It takes a really long time.
And so when the action scenes are lit, they're lit. There's a fight between there's a fight that I believe in Heaven's Field just took place completely off camera, was implied with maybe like two lines of exposition setting it up, and it said they fight or something, and it's between Lancer and Assassin.
Yeah, that shit was.
And it's amazing. So you're gonna be like fully on the edge of your seat during that Lancer and Assassin fight, and then it ends, and it's Shiro. I believe it's right after that is Shiro talking with Kire about Mapo Tofu, and somebody asked if the Mapo Tofu itself is extremely well animated because they compare it to like entrails and organs, right? Oh yes, they animated the shit out of that Mapo Tofu just so they could like spend 10 minutes leading up to comparing it to organs. That's it, and it's like, okay, we get it.
The audience that we saw the film with mm-hmm. reacted with the same fervor mm-hmm. at the tofu scene as they did for any of the fights. I would say it got just as much crazy, wild, out there.
The children love their memes.
woo, like fucking people losing are asking, their minds.
People are asking about the sweat. Yes, here's the thing. They retained all of the mimetic quality of that scene, which originally it wasn't that. It's, I guess, funny, but everybody just won't stop talking about it. So they animated
it. As you
it
can
so
tell, that, Jacob is irritated by this.
Well, it's so indulgent. It's not necessary. But anyway, so he's, I mean, yeah, it's
memorable.
You were
comparing this to JoJo's. Unfavorably to JoJo's.
So JoJo's does the thing where it could, the way JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is made now could not have been made at the time where it first came out, because it is, the way JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is made now is focusing entirely on what has stood the test of time and blowing that up tenfold, and like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we get it, memetics, we remember this. Heaven's Field does the same thing, only JoJo's is doing it cheekily and it's doing it quickly. This is doing it like, spending 5 minutes to go, and it's supposed to be serious. The Mabo Tofu
scene is
scene,
serious.
Well, yeah,
there's
some,
like, well, and there's, well,
it's comedic, kind of, in that Kire is trying to be stern, but obviously can't take the spice of the food, which is what's the joke.
But
is
he's
supposed
telling
to be
him important information.
But yeah, but and Shiro is upset and repulsed by this, and this is his falling out with Kire, right? So, but the comedy of that is played against the drama, and it doesn't really. So you can't be like, oh, this is. I'm really invested in the drama, because you're too busy laughing at the extremely immaculate animation of Kire unzipping his coat, the sweat coming down his clavicle. He pulls over his jacket. It makes the cross sort of bounce and lift up and hit the sweat on his chest. It is immaculate if you like your Kire fan service. And here's the other thing. This is the most sexual animation we have ever gotten in Fate, male or female. So if you like Shiro's abs or Kire's clavicle or Lancer's ass, you're gonna get a lot of it in this. You're also gonna get a lot of Sakura's boobs.
Sakura, first they give Sakura E cups in this movie,
right? So she, if you remember, if you've played the visual novel, it looks like maybe she has a C in the visual novel.
Like everyone's flat chested.
Well, everybody's pretty, but Sakura is the big boobed one, and she's just like maybe a C. She's slightly above average or something. I don't know.
Anime boob standards have changed since then.
I think that it's also different from what Nasu prefers. I think Nasu likes the flat chested ladies, and so that's what he did for this visual novel. But like over time, they've decided that because the other two are so flat, that Sakura has to be the big boob one. So they've now given her E cups, and it's just absurd. It's absurd. Her boobs are too big in this. It's too distracting.
Well, and they boob soccer.
They boob soccer constantly.
They boob soccer when she's wearing like a parka. Mm-hmm. She's wearing like a parka over a sweater, and there's boob socks, and you're like, no.
Yeah, well, you remember the ridiculous boob socking of Rin has this really heavy red coat that's, I guess, it's wool or something. It's a red wool
it's
coat.
It's like a peacoat.
Yeah, and there's boob socking in it.
Socks, yeah.
And so if you thought that was stupid, this is like, admittedly she has more of a chest to do this with, but it's almost more ridiculous. She's wearing a white blouse and it's just like, and it's down to her midsection. And it's
but
like,
it's pretty much just those two. There's more. I would say there's almost more dude fan service. Maybe not.
No, I mean, look, this is the scene. This is Shiro has a nightmare about.
That's not Shiro.
Has a nightmare about getting fucked. So that is that.
That's true.
That is. I won't say exactly what that is, but you could probably extrapolate what they reinterpreted for a nightmare about Shiro getting fucked from the head.
So someone in the chat says, like, I can't tell if this is a good movie or not. Well, that, to me, is the experience of watching.
Yes.
I'm enjoying it. I'm compelled by these characters. I care. You know what? I care what happens to that fucking Claude Shiro. I care what happens to him. Mm-hmm. I want to know, you know, I want to see all my favorite characters again. I want to know what's going to happen to Saber. Mm-hmm. I care about these characters. I'm invested in the narrative already. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you without a doubt, this, like, there's not a doubt in my mind. This is one of those, I would not recommend it to a soul.
Who has not already.
Wouldn't already watch it on their own anyway.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's no reason for me to say, like, yeah, you know, you should see this movie, Fate Stay Night, Heaven's like who would as a joke? Mm-hmm. Like, oh yeah,
and that
right
is
about
the biggest
for a living. Hey, you know, if you've never seen too much anime here, that's like putting someone in the deep end right away. Like it is.
So that is the biggest narrative flaw of this. Even if you already know, even if you're like, look, I don't need to be babysat through this. I already know the story. This is still a problem in that taking out all of Shiro's internal monologue. Like sometimes it's a fucking blessing because we know how bad Shiro's internal monologue can get, but he has no interiority in this. There's no monologue. It's just him speaking to people. And so for those of you who don't know, without spoiling anything, Heaven's Feel is the you know, an Evangelion rebuild where they retold the story enough times that they were just like at the beginning of Evangelion, they're like, yo Shinji, here's Lilith, here's this, which is very satisfying.
Shows up and says, I'm depressed.
Yeah, exactly. And so, okay, you know that. So that's Heaven's Feel in the visual novel. Because you've played Fate and Unlimited Blade Works, when you start playing Heaven's Feel, people just tell Shiro things. Like, they're just like, oh, by the way, I fought in the previous Holy Grail War, and so did your dad, and your dad is the reason you have no parents.
That's in the credits.
Yeah.
That is... You remember that Incredible Hulk movie with Edward Norton, where they go through the Hulk's origin story just in the credits? And you're like, all right, I don't gotta sit through the Hulk's story.
No, that's not... That's the prologue. The part where Shiro gets stabbed and summons Saber is in the credits.
Yeah, that's
not
what
all
I
the
mean.
Other stuff. Like, okay. Oh yeah, the setup is that's
any
in the
any setup at all is in those that
once again you must
in a montage in the opening credits. Yeah,
all that
you
prologue
have
stuff.
To know everything. They don't explain the Holy Grail War. They don't explain any of it. You're supposed to
all the common route stuff is in the opening credits in montage,
and they hold for applause on every single character. So like they walk into the church for the first time, and there's Kirei in there.
And
it's a slow pan up, and he talks for a little while, and then he turns around, and then there's like it holds, and the audience we saw it with went fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But if you're at home watching it on Netflix,
it'll be kind of weird.
It'll just be silence.
Well, and the really funny, the especially funny thing to me is like, so they do that with Ilya, who has a lot to do in this arc, but not yet. But she has several scenes where she just appears to go, yo, I'm here. And Gilgamesh, who is not going to have very much to do in this arc, basically at all.
I was happy to see him.
Yeah. He just shows up. So he doesn't have much of shit
like,
to
hey,
do.
Bro.
He just shows up and just, he's like, I'm in this movie. Like, that's it. It's just 2 minutes.
And so he's here as well.
Yeah. Okay.
What's up?
And, you know, but anyway, so the problem with this, again, is so they start by just telling Shiro everything. By the way, your dad this, this, this. By the way, I knew your dad. By the way, I knew your dad too. Here's everything that happened in Fate Zero. By the way, this is your sister, blah, blah, blah. And so they're telling him all of this. And because he has no interiority, he had no reaction. He's just no reaction, no emotional reaction, no dialogue reaction. It just like cuts. It's just everybody telling him this, and he's like, and then and then the scene cuts, and it goes to something else, and he just doesn't act as if he has any reflection on this at all. It's really even if you know the story, it's a problem because you look, Shiro's not an emotional guy. That's part of his character is that he's kind of emotionally repressed. But we need something to communicate this because everybody just expects you to Rorschach test this guy, I guess. Just like project how you would feel in that scenario onto him because he doesn't react and we don't get his internal monologue. We know how he feels if you played the visual novel and they're just like, well, we assume, you know, let's not waste time, you know.
Yeah. Shiro, they set up a thing where he's like, but how do I become the hero of justice? Mm-hmm. And he asks that once and then
he repeats
they pretty
it three
much
times.
Ignore it. They ignore it for most of the movie, but he just brings it up, like, kind of out of nowhere.
Well, it's the
like,
one...
It's like, he says it right at the end of the movie, and you're like, we haven't been talking about that this entire time. Why are you bringing it up now?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like anything you're really all that concerned with in the first place.
It's the movie's, like, thematic refrain, because, like, okay, so Fate is supposed
to
be...
Yeah, I know, but the movie doesn't seem thematically all that concerned with it, at least.
Well, no, well, that's the thing. So it just doesn't stand alone. It's just, it's like... It's like a party for people who are familiar with the story and will project their remembrance of these themes and these emotions onto what they're seeing because what they're seeing is like an extremely well animated and well storyboarded, like sort of subtextless thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Pure fan service.
Pure fan service. And, you know, whatever. I enjoyed watching
Do
it, but
you
it's
like Fate? Then you were already going to watch this.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoyed watching this, but, like, what can you even say other than this sure
I will say this.
Lovingly animated.
Go out of your way. If you're going to watch this movie,
watch
go
it in the crowd.
Out of your way to see the first show in your area whenever it, I think it's the 20th or something like that, they're showing it in theaters. See
Google
the very,
it.
Whatever the most packed show you think is going to be, probably the first show on that Friday. Go to that one, because watching this with your fellow Fate fans, you will have a fucking blast. Like, I promise you, I have rarely been in an audience that was that fired up about Fate. Now, we were in a special audience. This was the first show on the West Coast, period.
Right.
You had extremely motivated people in that room. Like,
yeah.
These were the hardest of the hardcore. They were going crazy the entire time. If you get even a third of what we got... I feel like your experience with the movie will be enhanced if you like that kind of thing. If you're the kind of person who's like, no, I just want total quiet. If you don't want to go for the enthusiasm or whatever, you might be annoyed by it. But the movie's designed to get that kind of reaction out of Fate fans. Mm-hmm. And it does, as we saw.
One thing I want to, I guess, spoil, like, one improvement. So this is the only, like, thing that, apart from just truncating it in general and not having a million cooking scenes, but they had to do that anyway. But the one improvement that they made that, like, makes Shiro more likable and, yes, do this, is the first time that Shiro sees Sakura has been abused by her brother, he does something about it. They don't have 20 scenes where, gee, she sure keeps accumulating bruises. Not my business, though. He just does something about it right away. Yeah. So you can look forward to that, like, fucking improving that aspect of Shiro's daughter, dunderheaded character. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
So, that is not the only Fate thing that we watched in the last week and a half. Week and a half. Mm-hmm. Well, a couple days for Fate Apocrypha. Mm-hmm. I watched that in 2 days. Fate Apocrypha. Mm-hmm. The first 12 episodes are out on Netflix right now. Mm-hmm. And if you are not initiated with Fate, would you say watch that?
Fate Apocrypha? I think you need to know the premise. It doesn't do a good job of, like, I mean, it doesn't do a poor job. It does the best it can. I think you need to know the premise.
It feels like it's doing the best it can.
I think you need to know the premise of how mages work, how the Mage Association works, and how a Grail War works.
Yeah.
But that's it. Apart from that, and you can just Google that, I don't think you have to have watched another one, but you just need to know that much. But that's it.
I mean, they allude. Saber shows up in it.
Right? A Saber. No, you just need to know about the classes. Like, it's not King Arthur Saber. Like, you know. I mean, she shows up flashback, but that's just...
Yeah, the flashback.
But that's just context for Mordred, who's a different character. That's just Mordred's story. If you know anything about King Arthur, then you... Yeah. Look, it helps to know about...
If you know anything about King Arthur, you're like, what?
Why, if you know anything about King Arthur, you're like, why is he female?
An anime girl?
Anyway, yeah, but apart from that... you need to know a little bit about Fate, but it's not... It is disconnected from... the world of Shiro and Kirei and all those guys. It isn't. You don't need to know anything about those guys specifically.
What did you think of Fate, the first 12 episodes? We've only seen half the show, which is one of the reasons this isn't like a series discussion. We're just going to talk about it for a little bit. Try to stay away from spoilers as much as we can, but it's only half the show, so like, there's not much you really... You can spoil stuff, but try not to, I guess.
Yeah. I dug it. I really dug it. I liked it a lot.
Where would you put it among the Fates?
Well, it hasn't finished yet, so that's a lot of... It depends on where it goes, but in terms of entertainment value, entertainment value and emotional investment, I would say so. Fate Zero's here. I don't know if it's on the camera. Hold on.
Yeah, you can see it.
Okay, Fate Apocrypha's here, and Fate Stay Night is over there somewhere. So that's my feelings on it. In terms of entertainment value and emotional investment, but like I enjoy and will actively seek out watching all of them, but I liked Fate Apocrypha and felt and enjoyed the story and liked the characters. I didn't love it like Fate Zero, but it hasn't ended yet, and there's a lot of promise, and I like a lot. It's not trying to be heady like Fate Zero or Fate Stay Night. It's just entertaining. There's some themes there if you
it's
like
just
look
entertainment. Like there's a few little themes, but and honestly, that's what it was missing for me because it felt like just a string of fights. Mm-hmm. I liked the show, but it's just a string of fights.
Right.
Like, and set up for fights.
They're good fights. And I like the characters. I like Astolfo a lot.
I did. By the end, I cared about some of the characters. I liked some of them. Astolfo was pretty good. I thought the servants were kind of a letdown, like, in the way that they executed them. Like, not all of them. I liked... who did I like?
There's so many of them. Like,
there's a ton of them, and none of them are really given that much screen time aside from, like, well, even Mordred feels like isn't given that much screen
time. Yeah, it's like, okay, this is our feature character, right?
A ton of time with, like, Frankenstein and the dude that falls in love with Frankenstein, and then, like...
Well, I liked them,
what's his face, Siegfried and the homunculus. Like, they spend a lot of time on that stuff, and it's interesting.
Well, they open by, for those who don't know the premise, there are 14 servants, and there's a black faction and a red faction, and they basically set you up for the red faction of the good guys, the black faction of the bad guys. And then they spend way more time with the black faction, and we actually like them more.
By the end, it felt like they were purposefully making it fairly ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
The black faction was kind of splitting off.
Well, so we like we said, there's not a whole lot in the way of themes compared to the other two.
No,
they don't center them, but like they are present there. And the theme, largely the theme that jumped out to me about Fate Apocrypha is it's about like fakes or castoffs, I guess. Like imitations, those the things that are not as worthy or whatever. And so the Black Faction is being led by a real asshole who has understandable motives, and that he was like cast out of the Mage Society over a prophecy over some soothsayer saying, "Oh, well, his bloodline's gonna die out like real soon." And they're like, "Oh, okay, well we're not interested in giving you our resources if you're not gonna procreate and send your magical circuits down the line." So off you go. And so it is bad that he like uses the Nazis and basically tricks the Nazis and then takes his shit from them at the end, manipulates World War II to get what he wants. And he seems like kind of a bad guy, and a lot of the servants that he summons are kind of like bad guys, but they're also like, I don't know, like the whole Frankenstein thing and Mordred and all these servants are like reflections of like imitations or not quite good enoughs and stuff like that. So it feels like Fate Apocrypha is kind of about that, and that's interesting to me. Like, that's a nice, and the bad guy's entire thing is raising an army of homunculi, which he uses them like batteries to power his servants, and it's like, that's another thing. It's like, yeah, what about the homunculi's rights? And it's just interesting. It's like, oh, that's neat, but for the most part it's not questioning these things very deeply. It's just like, this is an interesting motif for, and now they fight, you know?
Yeah,
and they fight,
yeah, like a normal Holy Grail war. You have seven masters who summon servants that are heroes from the past. They fight, one person wins, he takes the Holy Grail and gets a wish. Uh-huh. In this one group of mages has decided to hack the rules, uh-huh, and, or one, not group of mages, one dude really has decided to hack the rules, and
his name is Darnik Igadimalinia.
His name is Darnik?
Darnik?
Kind Darnik?
Yeah, well, he has a middle name, but I don't remember it, but it's Darnik Igadimalinia, which is just extremely fun to say.
Well, the dub, so in Japanese,
do you think
say,
his line dies out because
he, they say, like, in the Japanese, with the Japanese audio,
Igadimalinia,
but in English, they say, the Igadimalinia.
Yeah, and it's real good. It's real good.
And I just kept saying, Igadimalinia, every time they're, yeah.
I wonder if his clan is fated to die out because he can't convince anybody to marry into that name.
I don't know. It's kind of a bad name.
That's though. My sticking. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
Do you miss Miss Josephine Igadimalinia? She's like, you know what? I'm going to stop you right there.
Well, it's a pretty good premise for a show. Basically, they're like, okay, what if I have all seven masters working for me, mm-hmm, and I control all seven servants? Mm-hmm. What then? Turns out the Holy Grail is like, aha, fuck you.
And Simon the rule.
And brings up seven more that, uh-huh, you have to fight. And then there still can only be one winner.
Yeah.
So you'd have to kill off all seven of your own people, all six of your own people anyway.
Yeah.
So that's what this is about. Mm-hmm. A team of that team, the guy who did that, and then the seven servants that get raised up, and then also some extra servants that come around.
There are a lot of
including
people in
the
this.
Tremendous amount of time spent with the ruler, who, mm-hmm, is basically summoned to preside over a Holy Grail war, is Joan of Arc, who,
yeah,
is, at this point, is a full-on saint with more crazy power than anybody else, it seems like, is more powerful.
Yeah, well, she's ruler is a masterless class that only you didn't see it in Fate Zero or Fate's Day Night because those were fairly straightforward Holy Grail wars, but ruler is a special class that gets summoned if the Holy Grail war has gone tits up in some fashion and somebody needs to preside over it and fix things. And so they get supplied mana by the Grail directly, so they don't have a master. They're just, like, making sure everybody's fucking behaving. And that's Joan of Arc's roles.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't find her character uninteresting.
I did. I'm not that interested.
I didn't think it was... I mean, I'm interested to see what role she'll play near the end. That's, mm-hmm, more what I'm interested in.
Right.
I didn't like their depictions of two of my favorite historical characters, uh-huh, Achilles and Vlad Tepes, uh-huh, who have been interpreted a million times each, uh-huh, and there are imaginative ones and there are unimaginative ones, and this one had unimaginative, and I thought Achilles got the fucking raw end of the... Like, that was a shitty Achilles.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's still alive.
Yeah, he sucks.
He hasn't gotten any...
He looks like a generic anime warrior.
Oh, I thought you were talking about his character.
His look is bad. His attitude is not... I don't like his personality. Like, It's not a good Achilles.
He's just like, he's like diet. He's like diet Gilgamesh is his attitude.
Yeah, and it sucks. Yeah, it's not good. He's not and like, and Dracula sucks too. Like, I don't think his character design is very good. He looks like every other anime Vlad, and like
his wish for the Grail.
There's a lot
as it
of anime
out.
Vlads. Yeah, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I've seen all of them, and let me tell you, there's some unimaginative ones and some unimaginative ones, and this is an unimaginative one.
Mm-hmm.
He looks extra silly, especially near the end mm-hmm. when he's all super. Anyway, yeah, it's. But who did I like? I liked Siegfried. Mm-hmm. I liked the character. I thought it was neat. I was a little taken aback by like how many straight up fictional characters they're using. Like a lot of the Fate Zero people were like, and like Fate Stay Night are warriors of legend. Like, you know that it's not an actual historical person, but the legend is based on things people did. Mm-hmm. Like, it grew out of something. It's not just a totally, like, Frankenstein. It's not like Frankenstein. It's mm-hmm. like King Arthur, who may or may not have been a real person. They postulate that he was, right? Mm-hmm. But obviously probably didn't not. Do all the shit in the stories. Is a pastiche mm-hmm. of people from history.
Yeah.
Like, that's something a little bit more rooted. It feels like they're just straight up going into, like, Siegfried is not a real person.
Well, see, no, Siegfried's mythological. I think that fully counts.
Right. Yeah. So, Siegfried, I think, counts, but, I don't know, Frankenstein threw me for some
Frankenstein,
reason.
Frankenstein, I mean, like, Frankenstein has joined the pantheon lexicon of, like, sort of immortal figures, so I get it. But, yeah, like, technically existed as of the 19th century, and 19th century is 1800s, right?
Yeah.
Can never count. So, yeah, it's kind of dodgy.
I don't know. That threw me a little bit, but it was, like, it was entertaining. It didn't give me much to chew on, like the other Fates have.
Well, and there's Jack the Ripper, who is just fully a person that existed.
Yeah, Jack the Ripper stuff I thought was...
Jack the Ripper's terrible.
Yeah.
Let's just throw that out there right now.
The scene, although there's a scene where someone is feeding... lowly anime Jack the Ripper the heart of a mage, like she's eating the heart and she's like, yay, and I'm like, man, Fate's really fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
What am I watching?
Right,
like what's happening on the screen?
That's
if I describe
it. So another servant that I like, I think his name's Chiron. He's the Black Lancer, and they didn't give him a horse body, which I disapprove of greatly, but
he does have a horse body in one of the flashbacks.
Yeah, but like, dude, if you're gonna summon a centaur, summon a fucking centaur.
They didn't want to animate that.
They didn't. And he's like, well,
all those
it's
fight
not...
scenes, like it would have been cool, but they didn't. They were like, yo,
look, this is a personal and unreasonable
centaur.
This is a personal and unreasonable complaint because his master is in a wheelchair, so she could ride on his back. That would be adorable.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought that
was that. That's really cute. I know her wheelchair is like
a scene where she's like, I thought you were a horse. Totally going to work out. Do you see what I was going for here? He's like, sorry.
She's like, come on, make my childhood dream.
This is A1 Pictures. It's not UFO table.
Yeah. Make my childhood dream of riding a centaur come true. No, but she has a combat wheelchair, so it's not, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. She fights a car with it. Okay, we need to fully emphasize, like, we're like, oh, it's just a bunch of fighting, it's not as much, like, thoughtfulness
good.
Or character development, but those fights are so cool. Combat wheelchair versus, like, sedan with machine guns on it, you know?
And it is just an increasingly, it's a series of increasingly escalating setups for giant fights.
Mm-hmm.
The Dragon Ball Z power level stuff is kind of a little crazy. Like, it's already crazy. It mm-hmm. already feels like they can't beat each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like... Who is it? The Red Lancer? Who's like crazy overpowered?
Oh, he's like a Hindu god of some kind.
Yeah.
I don't remember his. He shows up very
Anytime
little.
Anytime they
so
bring
don't.
In the Hindu gods, it's like the end of the world and Fate. Like,
where he's like, everybody out! Everybody out!
There's a Hindu god that shows up. Like.
He's like the Hercules of fire or something like that. Like he's half god, but he's the son of a fire god. So he's,
okay.
But he's a Red Lancer, but he doesn't do much. Like everybody else is like, we're gonna do this. Oh yeah, Shakespeare is also a caster on.
I don't understand Shakespeare's inclusion. They just. Wanted to have some fun, I think.
Yeah,
just they're like, hey, this will be good. And like Shakespeare shows up to justify his presence in the show.
Uh-huh.
There's a whole scene where he's like, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm not gonna fight. I'm doing this instead because no one expects Shakespeare.
I'm gonna
to
quote,
fight.
quote shit at you. Well,
I'm gonna
he does...
quote my own plays mm-hmm. and then trap you in a dream world or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, he fights with pages. I mean, he
because of course he fucking
he beats yeah.
They didn't even have pages. Like that so when he was
I
alive.
I liked Frankenstein's monster, and I felt really bad for her because.
I mean, I didn't dislike her story.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was fucking weird.
Yeah,
it was she's really cool. Fucking.
She has a giant
weird.
Hammer.
Like Frankenstein typically does. Frankenstein, no. Hammer. Frankenstein actually has a giant hammer in all the most of the Castlevania games that he appears in. Frankenstein has a big hammer.
Makes sense.
I don't know if this is based on that or if there's something where Frankenstein has a hammer somewhere.
I think it just felt like the right weapon for him to have, given how he looks.
He's a big dude.
His head is shaped like a hammer.
Heavy, two-handed, heavy weapon. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's anyway, it's real entertaining, and yeah, it doesn't have like all the philosophy of the others, but like, hey, that can go really well, Fate Zero, or really poorly, Fate's Day Night. So I'm glad that I it didn't even try. It's just like there's themes here, but mostly we're just gonna throw fights at you, and you're gonna like it, and I did.
As much as the philosophizing in Fate Zero, Fate's Day Night
mm-hmm.
is not good,
mm-hmm.
I still like that it's there,
mm-hmm.
and I still like that it gives me something to think about. And it has a point of view, and it has something that it's trying to say.
I think that this has a point of view.
You're right about the cast-offs and the replacements, but I don't know what it's saying yet, so I can't comment on that. And there is really very little of it in these episodes.
The relationship,
I'm really, really anxious to see the rest of it.
Yeah.
I don't know how long we'll have to wait. Probably January or whatever.
Yeah, the relationship between... You see him on all the posters and stuff like that, but this homunculus kid... who's just like a kid, does not have a name. I don't remember if they give him a temporary name, but like I've already forgotten it because of things. And his relationship with Astolfo is really good, and I really appreciated that because Astolfo kind of knows that he's working for the bad guys, and so he just kind of wants to find some humanity in what he's doing, and so he's like, you know what, I'm gonna help this little homunculus kid escape. And it's just really charming, and it's just like outside of the war entirely, and it's kind of the closest that the show gets to directly addressing his themes, because this kid is gonna he's a test tube person, so he's gonna die, he's gonna melt in like 3 years, so he doesn't really have a whole lot. What's the point of saving his life, basically? What's the point of going out of your way to preserve something that is inferior, is I think that the question that this show is kind of asking. And like, it's easy to just sort of answer that, like, oh, all life is sacred, but the show is I don't know, the show is sort of interrogating that in like a sweet, thoughtful way. Because, like, yeah, Astolfo is a person who's going to evaporate in, like, 2 months or however long this Grail War lasts, and trying to care for somebody who's going to live 3 years. Like, you know, what is the purpose of this sort of little story they have going on? It's cute.
I got one question.
Mm-hmm.
How did the Black Side know that the Grail was going to summon 7 more warriors? How did they know this?
I assume research. They read a book.
Because they're saying that this is the first time it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
They said that there is a rule, as in, like, it is an established rule. Like, there's, like, rules for the Grail.
Because if
somebody...
you're trying to hack it, mm-hmm. right? This would be a surprise. At no point in the show are the bad guys, the Black team,
mm-hmm.
ever surprised by what happens when they collect all the servants themselves.
Mm-hmm.
He's never shocked. He's never like, oh shit, I gotta fight 7 more. Like, that would be a really good scene.
Mm-hmm.
If he's like, all right, hell yeah. And then they show up and he's like, oh, like, that would be a good scene.
Well, like that defeats his motivation. So think about it. He still has increased the odds because he's gone from 1 in 7 chance to ostensibly a 1 in 50-50 chance of winning a Grail War, right? Like, doing it this way, like, yeah, it's not perfect. He doesn't automatically win, but he's gone from, I have a 50%, excuse me, he's gone from whatever 1 in 7, I can't do math in my head, is, to I have a 50% chance of winning. Yeah. So it's still good. And he's forcing the Mage Association to acknowledge him, because they don't want to fight this Grail War. They're just like, fuck. You know, like, somebody found a loophole, so we have to, like, the Clock Tower has to call a bunch of people, and they have to get a bunch of, like, decent masters to want to participate in this thing, and it's like, it's not great for them, so he's forcing them to acknowledge him. So I think that, like, it works on a lot of narrative levels beyond just, like, you know, maybe when he first thought of it back during World War II or whatever, he thought it would work, and then he found out it wouldn't, but he was like, it's fine, I still have a 50% chance, and fuck the Clock Tower. So I think maybe that's what happened. But yeah, he's not surprised by it. He's had some time to prepare. But he's had a lot of time to prepare. He spent a lot of years growing test tube homunculi. So, you know, he's got his batteries ready. He's ready to go.
Yeah. Well, it's a cool show. I liked it. I thought it was entertaining. I think if you're a Total Fate neophyte, you actually could watch it, and you could probably just do a little bit of research. We had some questions in the chat on, like, which Fate we think is the best one to start with. The UFO Table Fate Stay Night. You should probably start there, but I think you should get to Fate Zero as fast as possible.
I disagree. I think you should start with Fate Zero.
See, people say you shouldn't start with Fate Zero.
Unlimited Blade Works doesn't make any sense, and it has, and its entire second half is shitty and boring. You didn't watch the second half. The second half is almost unwatchable.
I read synopses.
Yeah, it is.
And it sounded awful.
It is extremely boring, so I wouldn't recommend. Nobody's going to enjoy that.
Look, it's just, like, if you say
I started with Fate Zero, and I turned out fine. I turned out just fine.
I mean, I read a bunch of visual novel stuff before I watched Fate Zero. Before I watched the show, I familiarized myself with Fate Stay Night.
I didn't. I came into Fate Zero completely blind, understood it just fine, and was like, oh, I want to check out the rest of this. So,
well, if you're vouching for it, then I don't see why you couldn't just start with Fate Zero. That's the best one.
Yeah, I would say either play
all these other shows are just kind of trying to reach that. They're not doing that, but if they want my affection, that's what they're doing. They're trying.
I would say either play the visual novel if you have the patience for that, or play Fate Zero. But I wouldn't recommend starting with the Dina May or with UBW, because they just don't work on their own very well. So I would either play the original visual novel or watch Fate Zero.
Yeah. Someone in the chat says, Limecat Master says, I'd start with Limited Blade Works just so you don't have to suffer through it after something good. Get the bad out of the way. See, that doesn't really work for, like, someone has to be exceptionally motivated to sit there and watch through something that's actively dull and bad in order to get to a good thing that happens 12 episodes later.
Watch Nasu talk about the same thing for 3 episodes straight just to end with, just because you're correct doesn't mean you're right. Which is that's not an argument winning, and then they play fucking Last Stardust by Aimer or whatever, and it's like, you did not win the argument with that statement. It doesn't mean anything. Anyway.
Alright. Anyway, that's Fate Apocrypha. I recommend it.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
It's a good time.
I can't wait to see the second half.
Let's take some Twitter questions, shall we? Now, we took a couple weeks ago, we said we were going to do a show, and we didn't. And I asked for questions for it. And we got the questions, and we didn't answer them, but I have many of them here, so we're going to take a look at these first, and then we'll get to the questions for Fate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Overdouble wants to know, excluding Anno Hideaki, which Studio Ghibli alumni do you like to follow? Takahata count? I know it's a lame answer, but Takahata, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being shamed by this question because I'm not up enough on my auteurs. And as far as remembering individual animators, I don't remember those names so much as like writers and stuff like that. And that's not, Studio Ghibli didn't like produce a lot of those that I'm familiar with. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I did all this. I've been talking to, like, I interviewed the Ponok guys, and I interviewed that animator who is at Crunchyroll Expo, who worked on a bunch of Ghibli stuff and left after Princess Mononoke. Like, I interviewed him, and, like, I now will look for cuts of his, you know. And the Ponok guys, like, if you're following ex-Ghibli alumni, they're all there. Like, most of them are there. So that's kind of where the future of that is, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the way that Ghibli worked, with it being, like, totally salaried in between movies and stuff like that, they didn't have any reason to move on to other work.
Yeah, then that system...
They stayed there, you know, so I don't, you know.
Okay. I cannot pronounce his name. Leah of the Rebellion wants to know, has Jacob had a chance to watch the latest Digimon Tri movie? And if so, what did he think of it?
I have not. I've been too busy. So.
Oh, you haven't watched it?
No, I have not.
You kind of fell out of love with Digimon Tri.
No, the last movie was disappointing, but I don't think that I've fallen out of love with it. I just...
You watch a tremendous amount of anime.
Mm-hmm. Usually
Digimon is appointment viewing for you.
Yeah.
When it came out, you would be like, oh my god, and watch it right away.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't even seen the most... This question is weeks old. You haven't even seen it.
Well, and I feel like this was reflected by a lot of other fans. I saw a lot of... There wasn't the fervor for this one when it came out. It aired...
Is that whole thing going off the rails?
It just has no animation.
Oh, it's Toei.
That's the issue, yeah. It's not that the story's bad, it's that it has no animation. In fact, the reason that the story was kind of bad in the previous one was because they had no animation. It wasn't because they came up with bad ideas. It was like, we can't draw this. We have to fill time with nothing. And I hadn't gotten to it yet because it aired like during Preview Guide. It aired like, yeah, and I've just been insanely busy since then. So in terms of like, if I had to watch a thing, I had to watch another thing for work, so I just haven't got to. But I do want to see it. Once stuff cools down, I will 100% see it. But like, my feelings on Try up to this point were 1, 2, and 3 were really great. One better than each better than the other. 3 was fantastic, and then 4, you know.
So
not
you
good.
Not having gotten to it yet should not be seen as a condemnation.
No, I understand the disappointment following 4 because 4 was a big drop off of from 3. But
I would say poorly. Someone in the chat, Schrodinger's Matt, says poorly promoted.
Definitely.
Yeah,
poorly promoted and came out right when all this other fall stuff was landing. Like just real bad timing. So yeah. I will watch it soon. I do want to see it. I do want to see how this whole thing wraps up. But you know, I won't deny like the disappointment from 4. You know, stemmed also my enthusiasm. So
Julian Moran asks, do you think the new Kino's Journey problems can be blamed on bland direction?
A lot of them, yeah. A lot of them can be blamed. But there's a lot of problems with that show. That show has a lot of problems. It's funny because a lot of people are watching it, but a lot of people aren't liking it. It's real divisive. Like, if you look at the talkback thread, like, half the people are like, well, I like it. And they're really defensive about it because there's a lot of people saying, fuck this. Like, but a lot of people are watching it. And I say this is funny to me because the way the Kino's Journey was talked about for the last several years was as if it was this underappreciated gem. People always brought up Kino's Journey as like, oh, well, that's, you know, not a lot of people have seen it, but I really love it. And that was my understanding, too, of it as well. But then, like, this was, like, one of the most anticipated shows of the season. And I was like, well, over so many years of everybody saying this is an underappreciated gem, did it just become, like, a hit? And I didn't notice? Like, I don't understand. Not like a Black Clover-size hit, but, like, pretty well-known. So, but the show is not good, and I could get into a whole big long conversation on why, but I'm not sure that I should.
Maybe we'll do a podcast that's like the original Kino's Journey versus, and then, like series discussion that takes both shows into account.
Mm-hmm. I will say that it proved the, I feel really bad because his name just floated out of my brain. The director of Serial Experiments Lane, I can't remember his name.
Abe.
Nakamura.
He's not the director. Abe's not the director. Anyway,
Abe drew things for it. Nakamura is he's passed on, but like Nakamura was extremely talented because what he did with Kino's Journey, comparing the books to this. So here's the thing. The new anime is worse than the books. Like people are like, oh, the source material was always bad. The source material is still better than this anime, but like Nakamura's 2003 version of that was way better than the books as well. So you have like the adaptation was better than the books is better than this new adaptation. So that's kind of it seems like we've fallen a long way if you never read the books, so, which I've only started looking at more now. And it's like, oh, okay. This was not as strong as the 2003 adaptation of it. So, you know.
I mean, you're also, you know, that's the thing you saw first.
No, I mean, like, look, I'm not completely, like, blinded by nostalgia. Like,
I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying you tend to favor the version of the story that you saw first. That's just natural tendency.
Yeah, but
But I'm just objectively correct.
No, I'm not objectively correct. Like, I do have a different reaction to stuff. Like, I like things sometimes that I've seen after the other thing that I saw. Like, I have critical faculties that I use, and I would say use too much. Like, if there's one part of my mental skill set or just skill set as a person that is over-honed, it is probably this. And I don't, it's not a matter of nostalgia for me. I can see a lot of flaws with the original adaptation, but it does improve the source material quite a bit. So, yeah.
All right. I'm just saying, you know, usually that's wise. I'm not saying that the books were better. I don't know either. I'm just saying tend to prefer
that
the
is
first
absolutely
version
true. That's very true. But in my personal experience, like because I'm so drenched in media criticism and comparison and stuff like that, that doesn't the bias is not as firmly established in me because of my work and because of what I do. So you know,
Carlos wants to know how the new Wake Up Girls is. I haven't watched it.
Unanimated. Just like the first one. It's great. They got rid of Yamakan and they changed, they changed the character designs and they tried to get back on the horse with like new plot lines and stuff. And they still can't animate it. It's still like long shots on stills. I'm behind, but like the most recent episodes I saw were just like they have no. I am eternally charmed by how much Wake Up Girls continues to be like this weird embarrassment of non-animated, ugly, confusing, like, a mess. But, like, and by how good the story, like, it's the only idol thing that seems like it's really sincere and not, like, focus tested or, like, super saccharine. There's a super saccharine coat of paint over it. It just seems genuine, and it's about relatable stuff and relatable emotions and the kind of the weirdness of the idol industry and kind of the skeeviness of it, but it's just not animated at all. The production values are, like, through the floor, and I think that's become part of its charm at this point, is that it just barely exists and is barely getting by, because that's kind of what the Wake Up Girls are like. They're barely getting by. That may not be the truth of the actual idol group in Japan, but it is the image that they have fully embraced and cultivated, is, like, fifth place. Like, their image as idols is, we're fifth place, we're number 27, or something like that. It's real good. It makes me laugh.
All right. Angel X03 wants to know, do you find it fascinating that Land of the Lustrous is marketed towards women despite the designs being more male otaku friendly?
I don't think that that's accurate.
They think that's true. No. I don't agree with your premise.
Yeah. It seems like a high concept shoujo manga-y. It's like an Octavia Butler kind of thing as a manga. So it doesn't surprise me that it's aged.
It seems very like if dudes find them hot, I don't think they're designed for that.
No. It seems kind of odd. Like, they have big butts, and they can. Anyway, I'm not even going to finish that sentence. They have big butts, but apart from that, they don't really, you know, they just kind of look like feminine-ish rocks that happen to have big booties, but they don't really look moe to me. So, you know.
People sexualize everything.
Yeah. Sexualize that rock.
Carl Deck 12 wants to know, Netflix went from 12 to 30 plus anime titles in 2 months for 2018. Will that rate stay in the future, or will that get stabilized? Who knows?
Yeah, it's hard to predict. It's hard to say.
I think Netflix is making a lot of anime because anime is a lot cheaper than the rest of their programming, which routinely costs millions of dollars an episode. And they hemorrhage money.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing that I'm really... I don't know. I can't predict the future. No one can predict. Like, no one can predict what's going to happen in 2018 in any way, shape, or form, on any front, anime included.
Yeah.
It'll be a very interesting year. We'll see what Sony's doing with Funimation. We'll see what Netflix is doing with all this anime. We will see how this stuff all shakes out. Mm-hmm. Here is what I am chiefly concerned about. That Netflix is dumping so much money into the anime industry... that when something bad happens to the deeply indebted Netflix, so billions of dollars in debt, that will hurt the anime industry.
Yeah.
That is what I am slightly concerned about.
Right.
It doesn't do me any good to be concerned about that. I can do nothing about it any more than I can the changing of the tides. But,
right.
That is the... if you're going to be concerned about something, I would say... giant, deeply indebted company is getting aggressively into fields wherein you will likely be impacted if something happens to that company. Mm-hmm. That is my concern. I don't think it's a good idea to sit around and wring your hands over stuff like that obsessively and be like, well, what should we worry about? Nothing. Watch your shows. If you like watching how the industry goes, watch how the industry goes. But getting worried about stuff that might happen in the future is a waste of your time. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't be stressing about it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Before this passes by completely, I wanted to point out that Joshua Caleb in the chat has pointed out the very, very important caveat that the rocks do have cleavage.
They do.
Geology jokes. Yeah. Anyway.
Let's see. Dr. Raza wants to know, when meeting people, do you prefer to give a handshake with a firm grip, a soft grip, or a fist bump?
Industry people? What?
When meeting random people.
A random people. Okay.
I was a soft grip guy. I've become a firm grip guy.
I'm a firm grip guy. I'm not going to fist bump somebody I don't know. I will fist bump somebody after I know them.
I fist bump at conventions because I don't want to get sick. And I've gotten sick a lot shaking hands at conventions. Mm. So I fist bump at cons sometimes. Sometimes when I remember to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Yeah, I feel like a firm grip. Not like a crush. Not like a horrible crush, but like, yeah.
Just, you know.
All right. Okay, that's
fascinating.
Those are the questions from, not all of them, but those are the questions that I found from our previous attempt at doing this. Now, let me pull up the fate questions. Hang on with me just a second. One moment, please. I know it's in here somewhere. Ah. Okay. Cyber Mormon wants to know, what ridiculous name would you and Jake call your Grail War? Format being fate, tangential word or phrase.
Oh. This isn't really something you can come up with on the spot.
I would figure out a way to make it an acronym, like, fate the whole thing. Like...
I can't believe I fate the whole
thing. I fate the whole thing. Something like
that's
that.
That's fine.
Like
dumb you don't
pun.
You don't need an acronym. Let's just.
Yeah.
I can't believe I fate. I can't believe I is like the little thing with two hyphens on the side at the top. I can't believe I fate the whole thing.
Fate / crazy nights. Yup.
That's terrible.
Yup.
That's awful.
I'm gonna summon Adam Sandler.
No.
I summon Adam Sandler. To fight for me in the Grail War.
Ugh.
Okay. Now that I've... Why don't we just end the show there?
Yeah, that's
the worst
that's
thing
enough.
That's ever come out of my mouth.
Uh-huh.
Let's see.
No, it isn't.
This person wants to know if Tamamo is truly best girl and how perfect is she? Alternative versions of the questions. Why is Tamamo best girl? Why is Tamamo so perfect? Can you imagine life without Tamamo? I can, weirdly.
Do you wish, yeah. Do you wish to protect Tamamo?
do you have a best girl, Jacob?
From what specifically?
This looks like it's from Fate Go?
I don't know that
shit. Who is Tamamo?
She's in the Fate Extra, the Fate Musou game.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not. I didn't play very much of that. Fate Extra? Fate...
I don't know these things. I know Fate
the
Zero.
The Musou game was Fate
Extra. Extella.
Extella. I played a few minutes of that and laughed at the ridiculous.
Yes, and that
costumes.
Was about it.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for that question. Mm-hmm. I think if I had to pick a girl from Fate...
I mean, in Apocrypha, I really dearly want to protect Frankenstein's monster. I feel really bad for her.
I didn't know you were Moy for Frankenstein.
She deserves better. I feel bad for her.
I'll buy you a cast-off figure.
I feel bad for her because spoilers.
That
like
the
she doesn't,
get the, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, spoilers! Like she doesn't. She, the war is half over, and some people are dead. And Frankenstein's monster should have stuck around. Is all I'm saying. But like, I'm
you know, frustrated. We said no spoilers. You're spoiling who dies.
Well, she could come back.
That's true. So the thing with Frankenstein is it gave me an idea. They should do Frankenstein as an anime, but it's an otaku who collects dead body parts to assemble his perfect girlfriend, his perfect waifu.
That's disappointing.
They should
make I
and make it like heavily commentative on.
I thought better of you.
Yeah. No, like heavily commentative, like dark commentary on.
That seems like that'll be super grim dark.
Nihilism.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I'll pass on that. Thanks.
Super dark. Let's see here.
Zach,
someone says that's just weird science.
It is.
That no, it's not. They made a girl out of a computer.
Well, whatever.
I mean, no, that is just weird science.
Yeah.
They should make anime weird science, is what I'm saying.
Because the live-action one was so
what
good.
What would you say to Fate fans that call other fans fake for not having read the VN? Oh, yeah, we're secondaries, right?
Secondaries.
According
we're
to the stupid-ass gnome. Here's don't give a shit at all.
What they think.
What they think or say about you. Watch the show and enjoy it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what some jackass, like, Some jackasses on some forums or something want to just ignore it. It is not worth your time at all.
Like, they are not better fans because they spent too much time reading extra materials. Yeah. Like, you know, you should watch the thing that you enjoy as long as you enjoy it. And then when you don't enjoy it anymore,
there's no gate and no one hired them to watch it.
Yes.
They're just insisting for some reason that they're, just ignore it. Anyway.
Oh, and somebody mentioned, hey, you can just quote Fate at them. Who says a fake can't surpass the original?
Oh!
Oh! Oh. Track 44 is on the shit.
Fucking boom! I'm going to say
two extra
time.
For you, Fate fans? Yeah. Yeah. That's real good.
4DM says, regarding Apocrypha, the best girl, Astolfo, is not actually a girl. Discuss amongst yourselves. Well, you wouldn't agree with that, because you think Frankenstein is best.
Yeah, Astolfo is not best girl. Astolfo is a boy who happens to have long hair and undeveloped features. Astolfo's a boy. This is not hard to figure out. You know, whatever.
With the recent uptick in English localization... Yeah, this is from G.D. Nelk. With the recent uptick in English localizations of visual novels and the entire Fate franchise being fairly popular in the West, any guesses as to why Fate's Day Night and Fae Hollow Ataraxia haven't been officially translated and released stateside? Seems like an easier sell with broader appeal than most Arrow games. Okay, so I agree with this guy. There must be something holding it up.
Okay.
I don't know what, but a Kickstarter would do crazy fucking... Crazy! Can you imagine?
The only thing I know about this...
How much
I think
money they would make on a Kickstarter, we're gonna officially translate Fate's Day Night and
it would be
Hollow
a lot. And I don't know exactly what's holding them up, but I've talked about this on the podcast before. The only experience I have in this regard is hearing from a couple different translators for like maybe versions of Fate's Day Night that would have been ported to maybe mobile or something like that. And it was mentioned that there was a lot of difficulty dealing with the Japanese side of it and how they wanted the translation to be and how Nasu's prose is anathema and frustrating to translate, and not that that was necessarily contributed to not being brought over, but that it just happens to be. So there seems to be a lot of issue with bringing over Fate's Day Night, but yeah, it seems dumb that like all this other stuff, they're like, oh, we want to push for a mainstream audience for Fate and push it globally, and it's like, well, you should probably like bring over the original thing then. You know?
I mean, if they want to have a mainstream global audience for Fate, they need to do a start at zero, completely start fresh.
Which they have not even attempted.
Which they haven't even tried. Mm-hmm. They haven't even started walking down that road.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is the most fan-centric thing I've seen in a long time.
Uh-huh.
Apocrypha feels like you need to be fairly familiar with it. In order to really understand it. Like, you do need to familiarize yourself with it a little bit before getting into that show.
Yeah, you can't just start blind.
The idea that you could just start... It's such a good concept, and I think they would be really smart to do a beginner's...
That's the most frustrating...
To do, like, Fate Junior.
That is the most frustrating thing with Fate, is that it is its concept is very easy to understand, and that every format of it makes it seem like it's difficult. It's really hard to get. It's like, this is not hard to get. You could tell the story in a way that would make it really clear how easy to understand and enjoy the story is.
Yeah, I mean,
it's always 1,000 roadblocks, and the roadblocks are like superfluous D&D bullshit. It's like, oh, but you need to know the exact like stats by which somebody can enter this field of magecraft or something like that. And it's like, no, you don't. You don't need to. Or like I mentioned one time, it was during a Fate podcast of some kind, and I mentioned something about how Noble Phantasms and Command Seals worked. And somebody responded later with, well, actually, like, Command Seals you don't just say whatever you want and it comes true. It's this thing that this modifies. And it's like, okay, you don't need that information to appreciate the story. You don't. And saying that you do is both untrue and obstructionist to people enjoying what is a really solid premise and a good story. So you don't need to be so obstructionist with this stuff. It is gatekeeping for absolutely no purpose whatsoever.
Well, if they really want to blow it out, they can, and it doesn't really matter what the gatekeepers are inconsequential to whether or not Aniplex can boost this to a bigger audience.
Mm-hmm.
Aniplex's marketing and what they decide to make will decide whether or not it breaks out into the mainstream, whether or not they decide to spend the money that they would have to spend to get it in front of a mainstream audience.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a matter of they just have to make a good thing that connects. They have to fucking sell it and spend a lot of money and spend a lot of time selling it to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, That's not an effortless thing. And the reputation that Fate has, it is this totally inaccessible, crazy anime thing that, like, I know anime fans who have been in anime for 15 years and have not watched a single and are intimidated by it. Mm. They don't want to get anywhere near it.
I was fully in that boat, too, until I watched Fate Zero. I literally only watched Fate Zero because the reviewer who had handled the first half of it had moved on to another job, and we needed somebody to turn it around quick. That was the only reason I watched it. And, of course, so then I fucking fall into the Fate hole, and now I'm down here with the rest of you guys.
I like the Fate hole.
I have complicated feelings on the Fate hole. Have many complicated feelings on this hole. Anyway. I mostly like it. I like being in it. It is frustrating. I don't like... You know what I don't like about it? It's not that I dislike things in Fate so much that I... There's nothing that I dislike in Fate so much that I would be frustrated with the franchise over it. I dislike the attitude that some people have that it cannot be criticized. That's what makes the Fate hole frustrating for me. It's not the work. It's like, oh, I dislike this work. If I could just dislike something about Fate freely, that would be fine. But when you dislike, if you criticize anything about it, people treat it like it's gospel, and that's the issue. Like, that's why I dislike the Fate hole.
Okay, so, like, I don't engage with Fate diehards at all. I just enjoy watching.
You haven't written about it for the site, though.
That's true. I haven't written about it for the site.
So that's where it comes up. And
I have dealt with those people
trying to delegitimize
as they as those people have attacked the writers that I've hired.
Mm-hmm.
I have dealt with them. I know full well that the Type Moon fan base is fairly rabid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying you can enjoy Fate while totally ignoring those people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be part of your experience. At all. That is not a required part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't go to their forums. Don't follow them on
ours.
Twitter.
They come to ours.
Yeah, for you. I'm saying for the general people. Like, not for you, though, mm-hmm. but for the general, like, people who are interested in getting into Fate,
mm-hmm.
don't be intimidated by the fandom. Just don't participate in it. It doesn't matter. You
Absolutely.
Don't have to participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. What did you and Jake think of the crowd at the premiere? They were very loud. We were sitting
very
in front
noisy.
Of people who were over the top.
Yeah.
Like, you shushed them.
I shushed them.
A couple times.
Just once.
Just once?
That was all it took.
Yeah.
I did.
You did that, yeah.
I did that.
A little.
It was...
they quieted down.
They did. Well, and here's the thing. It wasn't the cheering, and they continued to cheer after that, too. The cheering was fine. The yelling was fine. Like, all that stuff was fine. It was the MST3K commentary that made me go...
Yeah.
Specifically the commentary about... And so we're not identifying these people. Specifically the commentary about, like, Ilias jailbait, LOL lollies, LOL. Like,
yeah,
I was like, if you make one more pedophilia joke, I'm coming back here.
It was just like Channer vomit.
Yeah, and it was like... So I didn't shut them up because I'm an asshole. I shut them up because I couldn't take one more joke about underage girls right behind my head. The yelling is fine. I'm totally fine with that. The laughter, everything. But that was like...
Yeah, just chain vomit.
Yeah. They shut up, though. It's good.
They did shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Have either of you tried... Coral wants to know, have either of you tried Fate Grand Order? And if so, did you enjoy it? He says game and or OVA. Did you watch that OVA?
I did the first one.
Aniplex sent a copy of it.
I mean, are there more? Did they just make one?
I have a Blu-ray sitting in a box somewhere. I need to dig it out.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what they made.
But it was... I only saw the first one, which I think was 40 minutes or whatever. It seemed like it was based off of a mobile game. It was really video gamey, and it was not animated, like, almost at all. I really liked what Lancer was wearing. He had a good costume change. Because it was Lancer... No, like... So he's Caster in this. So it's a different... It's Q Tulane, but he's Caster instead of Lancer. And he's wearing some cool shit. But it was really not animated at all, and so that didn't help. Like, Fate needs to be entertaining. Like, it needs to be a spectacle. And this was, like, the story of a video game, and it wasn't a spectacle, so I didn't care for it.
There's a guy in the chat, Lambcatmaster, who's been filling us in on the details that we've been getting wrong and, like, about Fate and, like, making sure that, like, here's what this is. I would say, and he says, like, I feel bad because I really got into the Fate lore, but I try not to be a gatekeeper. You are not a gatekeeper. I would say this is an example.
I don't have any problem with somebody saying, here's some extra information.
Yeah.
It's when they try to use it to delegitimize anything you say.
Yeah, and my point was just like, I just want to reassure you are a very helpful, mm-hmm. like, an exemplar, a good example of a Fate fan who is like really into it and enthusiastic and just is trying to be helpful. That's yeah, like, a big, there's a huge, huge difference between that and gatekeeping. You are not gatekeeping.
Yeah. And I especially, like, I'm in, and a lot of the people that I know that write about Fate are interested in what happens in the original material. We're interested in this. We're just not interested in somebody saying, in the original material, this, so therefore all your criticisms of this adaptation are invalid. We're not interested in that. We're not interested in the gotcha. Yeah. You know? It's we're not interested in the gotcha, which is a fun thing to say concerning Fate, but, like...
Yeah. So, yeah. But gotcha. Anyway, so Fate Go. Have you played it?
No.
Okay, I have. Mm-hmm. And, it's fun. I recognized it immediately as a slot machine because I've played gacha games before and know what they do and all that stuff.
Get all your
waifus.
And said,
like, oh, like, it's a fun game. It's a fun gacha game, but it's a slot machine. And I know the tricks of that slot machine well enough to not get really pulled into it too far. Right. I played it for about 2 hours. I think I didn't spend any money, and that was fine.
The thing you want to, so the big thing that people are drawn to is that is they want to collect all their waifus and husbandos.
Yeah.
Because, and not just because you can fight with them, but also like, this the dialogues that you can have with them and stuff. Like one of our writers who plays the game a lot had a birthday recently, and she was showing like all of the husbandos wishing her a happy birthday. So in their own different ways, like Gilgamesh doesn't give a shit that it's your birthday. You know, Lancer cares that it's your birthday, that kind of thing. Right. So, yeah, I mean, Cuchu Lane, there's a million Lancers. But anyway, so it's mostly like a waifu husbando simulator, with a story attached.
Yeah. Yeah, the combat I thought was actually not too bad or anything. Like, if you've ever played, like, Clash of Clans or, like, Clash Royale, what's that? There's another one that's, like, I've played that's kind of fun that's... just a slot machine, really. Yeah, like, they're fun, but it's a slot machine. It's designed to separate you from your money. We're getting a lot of questions about the Kajira score for Heaven's Feel, which I will fully admit, I heard it and said, Yuki Kajira, and then it was a Kajira score, and I didn't really... I am not that huge into Yuki Kajira. I'm more of a Yoko Kano guy.
It was used well. Well, no, I mean, it was used well.
It's a good score.
Yeah, I liked mostly how it was used in that there's, like, long periods of silence, and it's not overwhelming all the time, and I don't know that it stuck out to me as, like, particularly different from her past work, but it was employed well in the story. The way that it's used in the Lancer fight was really good, specifically the end of it. But yeah, like, it's not overbearing all the time. It doesn't really call attention to itself, so I would have to, like, actually listen to it standalone to really get into more detail about it, but... It's fine. It was a good score. So lots of silence in that movie, though, purposefully.
Yeah, a lot of silence, a lot of it.
Yep.
Go for that. Atmosphere.
Feel bad for Sakura. Feel bad for her.
Do you think that despite or because of the historical inaccuracies, that Fate does a good job getting nerds interested in real history?
No.
I don't know. I don't have any metric by which to judge that. I don't know if nerds actually are like, I wonder what the real story of Gilgamesh is. Like, I don't. Know if that's also a lot of those characters are mythological, so like,
yeah,
looking up myths and legends, mythology. I guess, I guess you're studying mythology. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess Jack the Ripper is
technically history,
it's a real character, it's a real person you could learn about an extremely shitty part of London history,
right?
A place that was horrible to live. Yeah, I don't. I would say like it may be mythology. Maybe it got them interested in mythology because the shows reference enough of this stuff to where it would actually be neat to know a lot of that before going in.
Yeah,
it's like it's neat. I know about that stuff and not encyclopedically or anything, but I know plenty of it.
Yeah, so. I don't know that Fate necessarily got a lot of people into mythology, as far as I know. But I mean, I think a lot of people who played Fate definitely looked up who Kojiro Sasaki was or who Gilgamesh was. Definitely, I think probably Fate is responsible for the largest number of people googling the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Yeah,
because that's something that's not necessarily taught in a lot of like high school studies on mythology or ancient history.
Yeah,
so like you don't really get through Babylonian myths.
I did.
Yeah.
I studied that stuff.
You just studied like the Code of Hammurabi and stuff. You didn't like read the Epic of Gilgamesh. Did you?
Yes.
You did? Huh.
I was in an AP English class and we did that. Mm-hmm. We did some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Gilgamesh, I read the Tale of Enkidu, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enkidu. Yeah. I've just never heard it pronounced that way, but I hope that's the official.
That's how it's pronounced.
Is it really? I mean, why do we know how the Babylonians... Actually, we have no idea how the Babylonians said it, because there's no... Yeah. It's a mystery. I hope they said Enkidu.
I've never heard it pronounced any other way.
It could be Enkidu. Enkidu. I don't know. You could put the emphasis...
Enkidu.
It's really funny to me.
It's not a Japanese word. Enkidu would be a Japanese pronunciation.
Yeah, well, we have no idea how the Babylonians said it, so it's just funny. I hope they said Enkidu.
Enkidu.
I hope they said that.
All right. Okay, here's the question. Mm-hmm. Ford DM wants to know, what servant would you summon for the Grail War? What are the rules? So, I guess Frankenstein's in there, so any fictional character.
I already answered this, but back when we did... another fate cast, and I feel the same way. I would just pick King Solomon as caster.
I think now that Frankenstein is in there, it really changes things.
Right.
Because I can summon anyone.
I think it has to be a fictional character who's been immortalized. You could pick a Marvel superhero or some shit like that.
That'd be boring.
Yeah.
Although I did like Thor Ragnarok. Not as much as everyone else did, but I...
Well, then you'd just
I didn't
be
like
some...
it anywhere near as much
okay,
as
okay, but if you pick Thor, you're not picking Marvel Thor. You're picking, like, that's literally a mythological character. But I would go with King Solomon.
I want to pick Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood.
That's,
and I want his noble phantasm to be like oil erupting out of the ground. That'd be fucking awesome.
That's not a... I don't think that counts.
Can do that?
He has to be like...
Daniel Day-Lewis? Could I just summon Daniel Day-Lewis?
I don't think he's been immortalized. In
I don't know. Jeff Goldblum is a good choice.
Yeah.
See, now I'm just picking... Pop culture figures that I like.
Somebody says my Holy Grail War servant Batman, and it makes me want to leap out of a building. It's like, ugh.
It's going to be like 2030, and we'll be sitting
they
there
make it
watching
mainstream.
We'll be watching like Fate, whatever, and
Fate,
it'll have
Marvel,
Batman
and,
in it.
And we're going to be watching it. It's 2045.
Disney will have purchased Aniplex.
and I'm going to be like smothering myself in my popcorn bag.
Disney will have purchased Aniplex, and it'll be Marvel versus Star Wars Grail War.
Just, ugh, no.
Nope.
No.
What impact has the Chudori wants to know. What impact has the Nasuverse franchise had on anime and manga as a whole? Well, they definitely wrote Apocrypha to sort of on the Nasu model, which is a million characters and a million things happening, and, like, it's a little tough to sort it out. Like, they immediately start complicating it. Like, they introduce a complex premise and then immediately start complicating that premise. That seems like a Nasu thing to me. At least that's where a lot of the Fate stuff is written.
I think that, well, Apocrypha is way more accessible than a lot of stuff that...
It absolutely is. I'm not saying it's not. I'm not speaking in absolutes. I'm just saying that's what it reminded me of.
Right. I think the biggest contribution that I've seen from Fate Stay Night's success, starting in like 2004, is the proliferation of Chunibyo as an aesthetic, because that's what Fate Stay Night is. It's pure. It's Chunibyo straight to the veins, and I think that Chunibyo as an aesthetic, separate from otaku dumb, because like okay, so what do you think of otaku culture? You think of Ken Akamatsu, you think of whoever wrote Tenchi. You think of that, which is otaku culture is pure escapism. It is all of these tropes and stuff like that in favor of pure escapism, whereas Chunibyo culture is all of these tropes and stuff in pursuit of escapism that punishes you and seeks to psychoanalyze you but also elevate you. So it's like, I'm actually the worst but also the best. And Fate Stay Night is about that specifically. It's not like, oh, you're the chosen one. It's, you're not the chosen one, and that's why you are actually the best. So you see a lot of more work like that. Like, ReZero would not exist without Fate Stay Night. And stuff like that wouldn't exist without Fate Stay Night. Fate Stay Night is... I don't know. It popularized and expanded the Chunibyo model of male characterization of otaku self-insert kind of stuff, I would say. Shiro is definitely that to a T. But I would say that's its biggest contribution to changing how anime is written, is writing more of those, like, cursed to be the best kind of characters.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's my guess. Because I can't think of anything before that that's like that.
I mean, Japanese pop culture in general has always pulled historical figures and put them into pop culture. I mean, I played... I played Samurai Showdown 3? 2 or 3 has Akamatsu Shogo, the guy who spread Christianity in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
He's just in there as a playable fighting character.
Yeah, I'm like, not sure that Fate came up with that. I don't think that was a thing that was... That was popular before, right?
I'm agreeing with you. Okay, all right. I couldn't tell if you were agreeing with me.
Yeah, so I don't think Fate's responsible for that. I think that's sort of a long-standing tradition.
Yeah, right. That's what I was saying. All right. Last question here. Custom Zaku wants to know, could Shiro still be effective as the apparent protagonist in the long run if the movie is apparently giving him less focus right now? Okay, so I don't know where you heard that the movie is not or less focused on Shiro somehow, because it's totally focused on Shiro pretty much the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have an interior monologue, but that's it. Otherwise, he's definitely the main character, and the entire thing revolves around Shiro. So
let me tell you about you. I love the conversation that's Shiro's in the church with Kira, and he's like, "Let me tell you about your father, Emiya-kun," and then he steps out, and Saber's like, "Let me tell you about your dad, Shiro." It's like, I just had a big conversation. I'm still reeling from that one. Yeah, not that you can tell on my face.
No reaction to it.
I'm still reeling. Can't you tell by my face?
By my completely expressionless face.
Here's another one. You know?
Yeah, the movie's totally about Shiro the entire time.
Actually, the movie executes it better. Instead of just having a long conversation with Kirei and then Saber, it intercuts them both. So it intercuts them like this. But in canon, what he had was... the way it's edited, you're experiencing them both at the same time, but in the story, he would have just had this horrible, crushing conversation with Kira, walked outside and had another horribly crushing conversation with Saber. That was a bad afternoon for him. Not that you could tell.
Yeah.
He didn't express anyone in his face. He's dead inside.
All right. I think that about does it for us. That's all of our Twitter questions. Thank you to the chat for showing up and dealing with 97 minutes of Fate talk. It's a lot to discuss with the Fate. Anyway, we will definitely be back next week. You will see us. We'll try and decorate this and get this all set up so it's a little bit more better looking and everything. Thanks for hanging out. I'm really glad to be back. I missed doing this for the couple of weeks we were gone, and now we're back.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Okay, thanks for hanging out, everybody. We will see you next time. Oh, wait, I got to do the thing. Hang on. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to the chat stopping by the live program. Theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher Play, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, all that stuff. Like and comment, all that, you know, all that shit. Yeah, all right. Anyway, thanks for coming by, guys. We'll see you next time.
I need a haircut.
Yeah, me too. Big time.